No, we asked you earlier on if you believe mandatory self-defence lessons should be taught in schools. And it was off the back of a suggestion from Anthony Kinane, who's a security expert and teaches Krav Maga. He is calling for mandatory self-defence lessons in schools, saying the number of women coming to his classes as they feel unsafe has increased by 1,000% in recent years. Anthony, good morning to you. Thanks for joining us.
Well, how are you doing, Greg?
Very good, and thank you for that. I mean, in the past, when there have been, and this has been going on for many, many years, you know, high-profile cases where a woman has been attacked or whatever it might be, we have seen in the past, and maybe you've seen it as well, you know, surges in women studying or seeking self-defence. Have you seen that pattern? But now are you seeing, you know, a more consistent approach where people come and they stay with the fuel to tooling themselves up to protect themselves?
Yes, of course. I think that ever since the murder of Aisling Murphy, there has been a huge increase in females coming to our classes around Ireland. It has been a massive influx. I'm talking about 1,000% increase on females coming to learn self-defence. Now, I'm just going to give you a percentage that's going to shock you. The present percentage in Ireland, 52% of women in Ireland have experienced sexual violence, and 18% of women have reported being raped in Ireland. 18% of women have reported being raped in Ireland. Now, that is a shocking statistic. I think you might agree.
Mm-hmm. Sexual assaults, yeah, I think it is rather than actual rapes or inappropriate approaches. And so what do you teach people in your classes then? What's Krav Maga and what's the benefits of it?
Basically, Krav Maga is not—it's not a martial art. Basically, what it is a self-defense system that we teach men, women, and children on how to react to danger, how to respond in aggressive situations or dangerous situations in everyday life. But it's really a preventative measure. Yes, we will teach men, women, and children how to defend themselves physically, but it's really about prevention. It's about preventing being in bad situations, making better decisions every day of your life. And understanding danger, understanding violence, and also having the skills to be able to react and respond accordingly, to be able to get home safe to your family and friends.
And why do you think it would be important maybe to have these as mandatory in school?
Exactly for the reason that I told you, that there has been a huge rise in women feeling unsafe on the streets. And also not on the streets, when they're out socialising in the workplace, in their own home. You know, I could tell you many, many horrible stories that women have told me coming into my school, explaining about horrific situations they've been through. Not only random attacks, but also from their own home, by their own partners, domestic violence, random attacks. You know, the increase in violence against women is shocking. And why I'm saying that it should be implemented in the schools is because it should start in the education in secondary schools. There should be a national program for self-defense for young girls and boys as well, but mainly for young girls to learn self-protection, to be able to recognize danger, to be able to respond correctly, to be reactive and not make bad decisions, because predators are looking for opportunities. And most young girls, and I've taught thousands and thousands over the last 13 years, most young girls are oblivious to danger. They're delusional when it comes to what it's going to take to be able to defend against a violent, aggressive, and, I mean, evil individual who has very bad intentions.
And this is not about size difference or fighting or beating someone up, is it? And I know you've made that clear through the course of the conversation. This is about tooling people up to be able to do certain things in certain situations or to avoid certain situations to protect themselves.
Yeah, of course. And, you know, everybody has a natural reaction to aggression, and we try and work around that. But also, it's all about tactics, techniques. I mean, if you have a bigger, stronger, aggressive individual and he's bad intentions, you know, most girls will freeze. Most girls will freeze. The vast majority of them have, especially sexual violence. They freeze and they don't do anything that they said to their friends are going to do. They don't know any. Most of the girls who have been through bad situations, they freeze. Their body is immobilized through fear and panic and shock and all the different emotions that you feel in that moment. Now, Aisling Murphy, She was brutally murdered. She tried to defend herself against an aggressive, violent attacker, you know, but it wasn't enough. It wasn't enough. Even though she fought really hard, she fought extremely hard to survive, and it wasn't enough. Now, Ashley Murphy, and I know Ashley Murphy never done any self-defense training, ever. And I know that. And I'm saying now that it's very, very important for every single young girl in this country to be able to defend themselves if need be. It's just so important. And the government needs to hop on this, because I don't understand. Like, for instance, you're not going to jump into the ocean if you don't know how to swim. You know, you send your child to swimming lessons because it's dangerous. If they fall into the water, they have to be able to swim. You know, but self-protection should be mandatory in this country.
Obviously, you know, a lot of this is perpetrated by males. And has been for generations in this country. There's also a body of work, isn't there, to discourage that behaviour, to talk to young men and boys about consent, about respect, you know what I mean? Rather than tooling up 50% of the population to protect themselves, we have to get through to that minority of men, and it is an absolute minority of men of all different backgrounds who are capable of this type of activity.
Well, let me put something to you, Greg. Right, over the COVID closures, I put together a plan for a national program, and the national program basically we are not just teaching people, you know, how to physically defend themselves. We are teaching young fellas how to have respect for females, to stop coming out with these sexual innuendos, inappropriate behaviour. You know, all these different things. I actually, in this country, they have a PTSD program. I don't know if you ever heard of it. It's basically, it's a program set out in post-primary education for teachers to, and they have, and part of it is to teach about sexual violence, sexual harassment, and also anti-bullying. And Norma Foley, actually, I was in contact with PDs all around the country, and Norma Foley actually got back to me, and she said that, oh, we're sorted. We are sorted. This PTSD program has been introduced into the classrooms all around Ireland, and the teachers teach young fellas and girls about inappropriate behaviour, sexual violence, about consent, about all these different things. But I'm teaching in the schools. I've been teaching in schools for 13 years. I've taught thousands of young girls and boys. When I asked them about this PTSD program, none of them know anything about it.
Yeah. But I think a lot of the responsibility lies outside of school as well. I mean, they're not there to raise our children, you know, necessarily. We need positive, strong role models, your Conor McGregors, your Andrew Tates, who maybe would send a more positive message about respecting women, uncles, fathers, you know what I mean? That's, I think, or YouTubers, you know, with the best will in the world, I think that's where people are getting their mindsets from, and it would be great to see people step forward who people can look to and respect and see as the big man, or whatever way they want to view it, but also that they spread a message of respect and consent and stuff. And I think that's it's all part of the one thing, isn't it, Anthony? It doesn't mean that we don't need mandatory self-defense lessons in schools, but we also, you know, we need to have come at this and as I say, men need to stop being threatened by this conversation, because everyone accepts it's a tiny minority of men that are responsible for this type of activity. And I just hate when I see men get very defensive about it, because they're not talking about you, but they're saying that maybe you have a role in talking to others to try and change this mindset.
Yeah, and I've seen it firsthand. You know, I've taught men and women, I've taught girls and boys together in groups in schools, and I've asked the tough questions, and their head, when I say, put up your hand, let me know, have you acted inappropriately? Have you made a girl feel uncomfortable? Have you said things that's going to make a girl feel uncomfortable? And they know they have. The heads go down, and the girls are looking at each other because they know, but the girls never speak up. You know, one in 26 out of men in Ireland have attempted or completed rape in Ireland. One out of 26. And that is a statistic. And also, four out of 10 boys from age 11 and 12 have in Ireland have watched aggressive porn on their smartphones. Aggressive porn at 11 and 12 years of age. Aggressive porn. And their minds are still being shaped, and that's the way they think they should treat women. That's a massive problem. The porn culture in Ireland, you know, the problem with young fellas on their smartphones watching aggressive porn, thinking this is normal, it's absolutely a massive problem as well.
And girls and also are exposed to that, and then it creates false expectations of themselves as well. All right, Anthony, listen, it's a broad, interesting conversation. I appreciate it. Thanks for your time today.
No problem. Thank you.
Take care. Anthony Canan there, who's a security expert and teaches Krav Maga. There's a pronunciation on that which escapes me just at the moment. My apologies. Right, okay. A caller says, I'm not wild smart, but I know if I see a wheelchair sign on parking spot, not to park there. Well, not everyone's as smart as you are. Another, disabled parking spaces should only be legally accessed by a vehicle in which the card holder is travelling. There are several cases of the card being handed to friends and relatives to facilitate using the disabled parking spaces. Driving disqualification for 2 months would soon waken those irresponsible drivers to the seriousness of the offence. The Cockhill Road Buncrana Works, a caller wants a comment on this. I lifted my daughter from work on Saturday at 3 a.m. There was a green light for the Cockhill side. I met a car coming through. I had the green light. When I went to the other side, I realised that someone had turned the lights the opposite way. There were no lights on the Buncrana side. There was nearly a head-on collision. The car had to go onto the footpath. It's very dangerous. I notified the guards and they turned the lights again. But hopefully we can get a system whereby we're not reliant on or the lights aren't so easily manipulated. That sounds really, really dangerous. Thanks for letting us know. Hopefully it does not happen again. All right, we'll be back with more in the 9 till noon show, including a very special guest indeed, after these messages. That's the very familiar opening bars of one of Tapao's greatest hits, China in Your Hands. We'll give you the pleasure of that in full in a little while. But why listen to those wonderful vocals when we can speak to them? Carol Decker from Tapao joins us now. Carol, thank you so much for your time. Good morning to you. You're very welcome onto the programme.
Morning. Thanks for inviting me on.
No, it's great. And we're looking forward to welcoming you to the region, to St. Columb's Hall in Derry, Londonderry. There are some tickets available. Not many now, it has to be said. And the show is on this Friday. You still enjoy the touring, still enjoy the performing, obviously, Carol.
I do, yeah, and I enjoy paying the rent. So.
Well, that's what we're all doing here, isn't it? Yeah, I know.
I do. I've got a great band. We do great shows. I'm so privileged to be asked to do many things, still many things. So, yeah, I have a great job. Thank you.
So when did it all start for you, Carol? Because the way you got into the music industry is probably very different to the way people get into the music industry now. I was watching a bit of I'm a Celeb last night for my sins, and the guy out of JLS was on it, you know, and they bossed themselves to try and get into the music game, and then they just happened upon the X Factor. I mean, there wasn't really those options there for you. You just had to do it the hard way, so to speak.
Yeah, we did it the really sort of old school organic way. So no social media, no mobile phones, don't forget. So we, you know, you formed a band, you played some local gigs, you hoped to get a bit of a following, you made a demo tape, you found the addresses of all the big record companies and you posted it off to the A&R department with a little biog and a picture one of your mates had taken. And hopefully they liked what they heard. And then they'd say, where are you playing? And back then, there were lots of different record companies, which there aren't anymore. And they would have regional scouts. So they could, let's take, I don't know, Polydor, for example. They'd have Birmingham, Wolverhampton, Leeds, Glasgow. They'd have a regional office. So if you had a gig in that area, you could say, would you mind popping along to the Birmingham show? That's close to us, you know, send your scout, you know. And frequently they said they'd come and didn't turn up. So that's usually what happened. And they used to go to the trouble of returning your tapes when they didn't want them. And because that's a copyright thing, they had to be seen to turn the song, you know. And then it all got quite sarcastic. So you used to get a thanks but no thanks letter. And one that we got was a multiple choice, which is, we're returning your tape because it's beep or some snotty, clever arsed, you know, remark. But so on and on and on and on. And I was in a local band in Shrewsbury, and Ronnie Rogers was in another local band in Shrewsbury. And I poached him into my band because he was really talented and at the time fancied the pants off him. And so got him in my band, started writing songs with him. We were in a relationship for 13 years and we formed POW. And there you go. And the rest, if you know about POW, you'll know we wrote all the hits and had 6 great years with the original lineup, you know. But it is different from today. However, I've got to say, there's a lot of noise to cut through now, isn't there? Because everyone can have their social media, everyone can have their YouTube. Home recording's so easy to do now, in garage bands and probably other things, that everyone can do it. So it's marvellous that everyone can do it.
It is, but I just wonder sometimes you can have too much of a good thing, and I think longevity, it's always an issue with a band, but we just don't see as many acts now. I think that, like, sometimes you wonder if you're going to put a compilation together reflecting on 2022, you know, what songs are going to be in there that will have stood the test of time for 2 or 3 decades. Yes, there are people out there doing that, but it's you know, the lifespan of a lot of the music we're hearing now, well, maybe it was always the case, Carol, and I've got rose-tinted glasses on. It just seems to me that the lifespan of music, a lot of the music just isn't quite what it was once.
Well, I think, yeah, it is a generational thing. And don't forget that, and I'm sure I'm older than you, but in every decade, there's stuff that sticks and stuff that doesn't. You know,
I suppose the way it went for TPOW, you know, like it happened very slowly and then it happened very quickly, in that you had success on both sides of the water. You know, often you talked about building up a following and a fan base, and, you know, then you get a number one, maybe get on Top of the Pops, and then you try and break America, what have you. But you just kind of did it really simultaneously early on with your first track, Heart and Soul.
It was chaos because all of a sudden it was climbing up the charts. Well, firstly, it was released in the UK and was a massive flop. So we nearly got dumped by the label in the first 5 minutes. And thank the Lord, it started climbing up the Billboard chart. So Ronnie and I were quickly sent over to do press junkets and all the radio stations. And don't forget, there's like, back then there were like 5,000 Radio Ones.
Yes.
All over the country. Yes. And you can be... huge hit one side of the country and they couldn't give a stuff the other side. So it really is different over there. And then the success in America, I'm sure it's the same now, but back then you had a big hit in the States and it kind of jettisoned you around the world. And of course it coincided with MTV was only a couple of years old and we came on the scene, so that was a big bonus for bands because your video could get played in all the countries that were taking MTV and everyone was super excited about the channel. So if you couldn't physically be there or you can't tour everywhere at the same time, obviously your video was doing the work for you. So that was amazing. But yeah, we had, it was quite chaotic at the start. We had to be everywhere at once.
And you talk about you and Ronnie as writing talents. And I do wonder, like, you know, say for instance, we'll go to China in your hand and it's so obvious and you've done this a million times in interviews and I'm sorry for this, but you know, at what stage of a writing process do you know that, right, this is it, this is going to be huge, or do you? Because I'm sure you've felt that about songs that bombed or never even made an album. So did you know when you were writing a song like, let's just focus on China in Your Hands, that, right, we've really got onto something here?
Okay, firstly, China in Your Hand, no, didn't know, and I'll tell you for why. We didn't get our record deal based on China in Your Hand because the song didn't exist. It was Valentine was the one that all the scouts would go, that's a great song.
Right.
Then Heart and Soul and Monkey House. Everybody loved that one. And we finally get a deal. So we're out in Wisconsin recording the album just outside of Chicago with Roy Thomas Baker. And a track isn't working. And we're spending days on it. And it's not developing from the demo. It's not fulfilling its potential. So Roy's like, I want to dump this and we're a song short. What else do you have? And he'd heard all the songs because he was part of the process of picking what went on the album. And I said, well, we continued writing from the date when we got the deal, got Roy on board, till we got to Chicago. I said, well, Ronnie and I have been working on this. And I had a cassette in my bag with the draft piano of China and gobbledygook lyrics, hadn't even really finished them. So I finished writing it on the hoof in the studio. So I played it to Roy. He said, that's a great song. I said, well, I haven't finished the lyrics. And he said, well, finish them. So they worked on other stuff while I finished the lyrics in another room while the boys were laying down guitars on other tracks. And, of course, Roy produced amongst many, many hits, Bohemian Rhapsody, so that gives you some sense of why.
Decent.
Exactly.
Fallback,
so,
yeah.
Yeah. So, no, I didn't know with China because Roy pulled that one together. But it, for me, Valentine, and particularly Heart and Soul, I knew Heart and Soul was unique with the double vocal, the talking vocal, the singing vocal, the very cool bass line that Ronnie wrote. And people ask about the process of songwriting. It's myriad. And Heart and Soul was born out of a new toy. My dad lent us some money. We bought a keyboard. It was one of the new state-of-the-art ones, and it had an inbuilt sequencer, which means you play a little riff, then you record it internally, and then the keyboard just keeps looping it and playing it and playing it. So Ron had put in like, bom, 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 and it just kept going around in a circle, and then start going, ga, 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 riffing on some chords. And then I start making some noises, and away you go.
Yeah.
That was born that way. China in Your Hand was born of a story. I watched a documentary. I saw Mary Bischelli writing the book Frankenstein, and it was a story within the story, Wheels Within Wheels. I really find that fascinating. So many different ways of writing a song, and no, you don't always know if it's a hit.
The reason why I've been so quiet listening to you is because I've found myself down a TikTok rabbit hole lately of footage of people working on songs and putting the songs together, and I find it also fascinating. It's mostly sort of like late 80s, early 90s hip hop, but still just how these, how in that room, you know, you see something being created that just becomes, you know, that like your songs you talk of there, they evoke real memories and emotions in people like Smell. I think it's so incredibly important. You get a sense of that, do you? That your songs are intertwined into people's lives. I would say it'd be an amazing feeling.
I get China on Your Hand. Often it's people's first dance at their wedding and stuff. And without bringing the party down, I this morning opened an email to our To Power Live email from a lady. She's a long-term fan, got all the albums, been to all the concerts, is now seriously ill and is taking the time to tell me how much my music means to her and how it keeps her going. So that was my first email of the morning, lumping through.
Did you see that as a gift, though? Yeah. I mean, that's it's tough. It has to be processed, but isn't it lovely that that person in that time wanted to share with you how important your work was to her?
Yeah, and it's something you forget. You know, when I was young, I had songs that I was like, oh my God, those lyrics, they must have been spying on me. That's how I feel. You know,
that's good songwriting, isn't it? Because good songwriting, a listener can apply. You could write a song and write a song and it means something to you or based on something in your life. But a good song, it transfers to different people's emotions and different things with their life. Oh, and I think that's
Do you remember How Long by Ace?
Mm-hmm.
So I had a crush on this guy, and I used to see him at the local disco, and then I went away on holiday with my parents. I was quite young, I was like 17 or something, and came back thinking, now my plan, you know. And when I get back, he's smooching with this gorgeous blonde and to Ace, and the lyrics were, how long has this been going on? I'm like, oh, poor Carrick, must have read my mind. You know, my broken heart, that song summed it all up. And when you're young, you feel things so passionately. And people do tap into, you know, your emotions or the zeitgeist at the time, whatever, you know. And yeah, but I didn't realise it at the time. I was just an arrogant, big-headed pop star. But now I realise that I was part of people's lives, like Ace was part of my life, you know.
Yeah, okay. And Heart and Soul too, it was a bit of innovative. The late 80s into the early 90s, I think it's a great time for music of all different genres, you know what I mean? And then it went into the classics 90s, which young people still enjoy nowadays. But I'm thinking like KLF and EMF and, you know, all that kind of stuff where new kind of sounds and things were happening. I've got to throw Milli Vanilli in there for the crack, seeing as they're having a bit of a resurgence lately, the gentleman that's left. But, you know, Heart and Soul, you talked about the talking track, some people, elements that some people might interpret that as rapping, or was it a bit of risk at that time?
Yeah, it was. Was it a risk? No, I'm going to contradict myself. Because remember, I always loved Rapture by Blondie. So Debbie Harry does a great rap there. And we needed something percussive in the track. And there were some spaces and we just needed to fill them. And we were trying all different shakers and rhythm and you know, and then remixing things. And the producer we were working through at the time said, it needs more vocals. It needs like percussive kind of vocal. So, and because I had the whole melodic one all mapped out and the chorus was great, you know, give a little bit of heart. We're really happy with that. And so again, he said, right, you go off and get some more lyrics. And so I went and sat down and got the whole just started making noises to fill the gaps, fill the holes in the song. And then I started, then you have to work on finding the right words that make sense.
Mm.
You know, so it was a real discipline writing that song, which is why I'm very proud of it. And I still think it sounds so cool when you hear it on the radio, because the mix is, you know, Roy Thomas Baker and our engineer at the time, Joe Napier, just the best.
Yeah, I teased when we conclude shortly, I teased China in Your Hand at the beginning, but I'm actually going to play it with heart and soul, actually. An executive decision I'm making right here, right now. The Kapow in its original format, and people can enjoy it in a wonderful format now that's been around for quite some time, but it's quite fleeting. You know, just, was it 4 years? Did you jack it in 91 in that?
We got signed in 86. The original lineup split up in 91. Mm. And then Ronnie and I went our separate ways personally. So just down tools for a little while. I did some acting. I did radio presentation. I met my husband. I started my family. So the 90s was full of different things.
Trauma, you know. And then wonder and all of that. And it's all daisy chained. It's funny how life works, isn't it? Because one thing can't happen without the other, can it?
No. And then started working again when Scarlett was like, she wasn't even one. I was back on the road. And then 2001, I get a call. Do you want to go on a big 80s like package with Paul Young? It was Paul Young, Kim Wilde, Go West, me and China Crisis. Wow. And we did the arenas in the UK. And collectively sold quite a lot of tickets. It was great.
I'm not surprised.
And that hasn't stopped. So I will either work on my own with a house band, big house band, big festival. I do a lot of orchestral work. I did a huge tour in Germany last year with a 60-piece orchestra. That was amazing. I just got back from Dubai with they put a great house band behind you and they learn all your stuff, obviously. And then I was out in Germany again doing a few shows out there. I've done all my festivals with house bands this year and with my own band. And
which you're going to bring to Derry. And we were talking, and it's kind of
happened. Ronnie Rogers, I've got to say, for the diehard fans, I have an amazing band.
Right.
But it's, let's turn that off. But it's Ronnie Rogers. So he's been back in the band for a few years now and he's the guy who wrote all the songs with me. So it means a lot to people that he is on that stage.
No disrespect to other members of the band, but that's too incredibly important. And just very briefly, you know, there's a new audience all the time, obviously, as well, Carol. It's not just nostalgia there, because, you know, we were talking to DJs in this program not so long ago, and the stuff that still gets the pops is the older stuff. It's stood the test of time to a brand new audience. Teen discos, 14, 15, 16-year-olds, it's the older music that they're responding to. So I won't hold you any longer, Carol. It's been an absolute pleasure speaking to you. We can't wait to get you to St. Columb's Hall in Derry/Londonderry. There's a few tickets available, backed up by Spandex Ballet. I'm not sure if that's more of a reflection on what they're wearing or what they're playing, but I think I can work that one out. And they'll also get to see you and Ronnie on stage together again, performing all of the hits. It's
on the 24th, this Friday.
On the 24th, indeed. Listen, safe journey over. Have a wonderful time. And delighted to hear that you're so well and so active. And why wouldn't you be? Thanks so much for your time, Carol.
Cheers now.
All right, Bye. Take care of yourself. Carol Decker there from the band Kapow. We were talking an awful lot about heart and soul.
Watch the show live now on YouTube, Facebook, and at highlandradio.com.
Okay, that is Tapao there, Heart and Soul. You can see them live. The two original members of that band, Ronnie and Carol. I know them now, so I can just use first names. It's Friday the 24th of November at St. Columb's Hall, Derry. And you can get more information from musiccapital.org. We mentioned a little earlier on during the Community Garda information about the lights switch on in the Twin Towns and also Letterkenny. And I want to give everybody an opportunity, if you're involved in a Christmas lights committee, no matter where you are across the region and you have an event, please get in touch with us. And I want to give it a mention and give it a plug so everyone's treated equally here, okay? So wherever you are, and it doesn't matter if it's huge or little, maybe it's a smaller village and it's one tree, it doesn't matter. If you want the locals out and you want to spread the word, please use us. So if you have a switching on event over the next week or two and you want to get a bit of publicity, please get in contact with us. You can give us a call on 07491 25000, or if you prefer, you can text WhatsApp 086 60 25000, and we'll give every one of them a really good plug. So let us know if you're involved or you know when you're involved in a committee like that. We're more than happy to give it a plug. Okay, I do have to take a very, very quick break. Our next guest coming right up. Okie doke, Breda Dooley is the Regional Recruitment Manager with Matrix Recruitment. Breda, I'm sorry for holding you. Thanks for your patience and good morning to you.
Good morning, Greg. Thank you for having me on your show.
No, it's our pleasure, and it's an important issue. Irish bosses are being urged to step up when it comes to tackling bullying in the workplace. And do you think many bosses maybe need to wake up to the fact that bullying is actually taking place in the workplace and to be able to identify it?
Yes, this is Matrix Recruitment's sixth year running the equality workplace equality survey. And the key findings, and to answer your question, is that 38% surveyed say that bullying in the workplace is an issue. So employers do need to be aware that it is a problem. And out of that, 3 in 4 workers have witnessed it or been a victim of bullying. And of those, 39% say they were bullied directly. And in terms of the types of bullying that was reported, almost half, 45%, have been openly criticised in front of a work colleague, and a third blamed for something without justification as well. It was also reported that 29% had disparaging remarks made towards them, extra work piled on to create stress, exclusion from work gatherings, and verbal abuse. So yes, it is an issue in the workplace around bullying, and employers must ensure, you know, that they have the correct, I suppose, policies and procedures in place to and proper training around that. You know, it's okay to have the procedures, but that people are trained around, you know, what constitutes bullying and stuff like that. And if somebody is being bullied, that there is the proper that are listened to, you know, that there is an anti-bullying policy in place and that their complaint is dealt with in an effective manner. You know, out of the findings, 32% felt that the issue was not, when they reported it, that it wasn't dealt with effectively or smoothly or in a discreet manner, or their complaint wasn't taken seriously.
Yeah, and you can't bury your head in the sand in this, because say you don't want the hassle of dealing with the personalities that you might have working for you. You're going to be dealing with it one way or another. Presumably, it's better to have a good HR plan system in place, you know, pathways to resolve these situations. Because as I say, you're going to be dealing with it potentially one way or another, either reputationally or, you know, before a commission or some other body.
Yes, exactly. So if somebody does, you know, if you would say if you are experiencing bullying, let's say in the workplace, my advice would be speak to your HR department or your manager or confide in a colleague. And if somebody does come with that complaint, you know, deal with it, you know, effectively, because as you say, you don't want it kind of escalating into the WRC. You want to be able to deal with it. And not everything constitutes bullying. Sometimes our perception might be a little bit different. So, but if you deal with it in a discreet manner, and you know, listen to the employee, and you know, and get to the understanding of what's happening, and you know, it can prevent it from escalating any further.
And you have to give people the best chance to comply or to do the right thing, don't you? And I think, you know, good training or conversations are important. Like, I know it's phrased as disparaging remarks about appearance, race, sexual orientation, and or gender, but that's subjective. Any remarks about those things I think some people can find offensive. And also exclusion from work gatherings. How many managers or what have you would fully recognise that that actually can be perceived as bullying or very upsetting to the excluded member of staff? Do you know what I mean? So an education and conversation right from the get-go here, I think is really important.
Yeah, and that's, you know, it's exactly... communication, keep, you know, a proper up-to-date training on an annual basis as well. And let's say if you're a smaller company, you mightn't have a HR department that might be, you know, to do that. There is other, you know, companies that provide, you know, can provide you with proper policies and procedures and can come in and do the training for you to guide you in that area. So yes, not every manager or, you know, would understand what constitutes bullying. And so yeah, I agree, proper training there is definitely required.
And if you've got a toxic workspace, it can get around. We are at statistically full employment. There are a lot of vacancies. There's a lot of competition. There's a lot of people looking for alternatives. It's really important that you have a, and I think almost it's equal or as important as what you are rewarding people with financially, isn't it? I mean, in a competitive space, a, you know, a safe, happy, productive work environment is really important, I think, to prospective employees.
Yes, and it will, if you have a good atmosphere, as you say, a safe environment, you know, it will retain your staff. People will be happy. They want to go to work. And it is, it's the employer's obligation under law to ensure that your staff are under the Safety, Health and Welfare and Work Act, that people have a safe environment to work and that there is no bullying going on. But yes, it will definitely retain your staff. But if there's a toxic environment, people do talk. And it can spread, you know, not just inside in the workplace. It can spread you from hiring future people as well, as, you know, if potential candidates are looking to apply for your job, but they ask somebody about it and about the company, and there's a, oh God, that's not a great workplace. It, you know, they don't deal with bullying in the right manner, or there is a bit of bullying going on there. It can prevent people from, you know, good potential candidates applying to your company.
All right, Breda Dooley, Regional Recruitment Manager with Matrix Recruitment. Anything going, you know, decent money, decent options, health benefits, you have our contact details now. I can be poached. That's all I'm saying. All right, Breda.
Okay, thanks, Greg. We'll definitely consider you.
Take care of yourself. Bye-bye. Right, I want to go to Elaine, though, first, and maybe you can help Elaine. How are you keeping, Elaine? Good morning to you.
Hi, Greg. How are you?
I'm all right. Now, you had a bit of a sickener, isn't it? No one wants this to happen to me. You returned to your car in the short-stay car park at Letterkenny University Hospital last Friday morning, and what did you find?
We didn't initially realise whenever we went back to the car in the car park, Greg, because we went into the car from the rear of the car.
Understood.
And it was when we returned back to Balbuffet and we had parked the car, and I had noticed that when I closed the driver door that there was marks all over the bottom bumper at the side, and I rang my husband and I was like, did something happen to the car, or, you know, what has happened? He was like, no, I never noticed. So the only place that we retraced our steps on the Friday, and there was three places in general. And I went to two of the, I contacted Letterkenny Hospital first of all, and they said that their cameras are on the roof, that they're too far for to see anybody coming and or going out of the short stay car park to make out registrations or anything. And then we were in Mr. Chippy, and there was another place as well. And then we had contacted those two buildings about CCTV and that, and they were very good. And we went through the CCTV, and that, and there was no, at the time where we were parked in both places, no cars moved from beside us.
Yeah.
So therefore, it was back to the drawing board, and it was Letterkenny General between, I would say, 8:50, 8:55, and we were back at the car just around 10:10 in the morning.
This is last Friday morning, just to drag people's
Friday morning,
memories again.
Yeah, and the short stay car park.
Yeah, now quite significant damage was done to the vehicle.
Well, I thought if I had wiped it off with my hand and that, Greg, and maybe washed her, that, you know, it would be fine. There is some, really, because my car is charcoal grey, and there is some very deep marks in it. But now that I have washed her and she's been left sitting, the white paint is still coming through on it. So I'm going to have to take her now and get her obviously resprayed or fixed or whatever, which is going to cost maybe €300 or €400.
Oh, at least for the paintwork, it's going to be that. That's if you don't need a new bumper and your wing hasn't been misaligned or anything along those lines. Now, it is possible that a person got back from the hospital. Sometimes we can be up to high dough when we're leaving a hospital. It's very possible that they didn't realise at the time that they had damaged your car, but they will know because if they've got a white vehicle, there'll be some grey paint.
They would have done damage to their own, yeah.
Precisely. So rather than it being a hit and run in inverted commas, it could be simply a mistake and they've been unable to make contact with you. So you're appealing to them to do the right thing in terms of repairing the damage they've done to your car.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And you know it's white, and you're clear that it was in Letterkenny University Hospital, and it was early between 8:50 and 10 on Friday morning. You're just asking the people to come forward.
Yes, it was indeed.
Now, if they want to contact us, Lane, we'll pass on that information, because it is a real kick in the teeth.
That's perfect.
All right.
I know it's hard times for everybody. I don't expect it done right away, even if the person is prepared. You know, it's Christmas for everybody. If they were even prepared to do something about it after Christmas, it would be fine, you know, but it's the fact that it happened and maybe they didn't know, or else they just didn't want to say, do you know?
Yeah, we'll hope it's that. Okay, Elaine, I think you've been quite Hopefully. Gracious there as well. All right, listen, if we get any contact from that person, we'll certainly pass it on to you. Is that all right?
Thanks so much.
Okay, Elaine, you have our details, 086-0749-125,000, if you want to give us a call. It's very possible a genuine mistake, and the person might be going, oh, I accidentally rubbed off someone's car and I can't track them down. They might have, you know, been looking around the place as well to see if they could find. Well, we can put you together there. And as Elaine said there, Christmas, maybe things could be tight. Maybe if you wanted to wait till after Christmas to do those repairs or to pay for them at the very least. Okay. Right. Now, Paula Gallagher, you're in Derrynconner, aren't you? Yes, indeed. You are €50 better off. You've won a €50 fuel voucher from Kelly's to use in your local Circle K. So the correct answer was soccer, as they say in America, football. And you've won €50. All of you have entered today for the Silver Tassi competition. And if you listen to the overnight, by the way, you can still enter that, okay? Because we'll pick up those entries the next day as well. You're all in the hat for Friday. That big draw's on Friday. And we've an extra special voucher from Kelly's on Friday as well. So it is a week of giveaways. So stay tuned to us here on Highland Radio. And we've some really exciting stuff coming up as well that we'll announce for you on Friday. Morning, Greg. I won't be voting for any councillors or TDs this time round, as not one will do as they promised. I'm really looking forward to them coming to my door. They've destroyed the country by doing exactly as the UN tells them. That's what a listener believes there. Right, listen, I have to go. Sorry, look at the time. The morning has flew in. Thank you so much for all you thank you to all of you for listening. John Breslin's coming up next and around the Northwest. We're back with you with another 9 till noon show tomorrow morning at 9. But for me, Greg Hughes and the team, Caroline Orr and Shannon Wilkie? Wilkes? Wicks? Shannon? Wilkes? Wilkins? Shannon Wilkins. We're back with you tomorrow morning at 9.